7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, the fixture for rounds 1 to 4 has landed, and as Scoop told us 2 weeks ago, it begins with Richmond versus Collingwood, then Geelong versus Hawthorn at Geelong. It's a blockbuster start. The Thursday night fixtures look set to be a weekly event, but the most significant change is the streamlining of Sundays that now have 3 consecutive games made possible by the shortening of quarters. It begins at 1:05 with the GWS taking on North Melbourne. Then you have Sydney versus Essendon sandwiched in the middle, beginning at 3:35 p.m. And finally, the Saints versus the Bulldogs at 6:05, finishing around 8:30. I'm no fan of crossover games, and this, for me, is a step forward. But it still leaves 2 games on Saturday night going head-to-head, which is a net loser for the game and for the neutrals who would like to see each and every other game. So the Cats and Lions appear to be the big winners. Geelong have 3 of their first 4 games, including Carlton, Hawthorn and Gold Coast at Geelong. And get this, of Hawthorn, only Patton, Scully and Burgoyne have actually been down to the great ground of Cadinia Park. And Brisbane, well, they have a flush. 4 out of 4, Frio, West Coast, Adelaide and Port, all at the Gabba. The losers, well, that's in the eye of the beholder. But clearly the Saints aren't happy. No free-to-air games. They've got the Bulldogs, Collingwood, Richmond and Carlton. And arguably, of course, the hub teams. But what they've given up, they've also gained. No away games, no home games. So it will be interesting to see how that all unfolds. Let's welcome the team. Scoop, what do you have made of the draw? Welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. Looking forward to speaking to Lloydie. There's so much, I think, in this new fixture. The return of Sunday night games that you just alluded to. So 6:05, yep. People obviously, now with crowds removed from games, Jared, they want to make it so that people can essentially jump on the couch from 1 o'clock,
yep,
and watch 6 or 7 hours straight of footy. The last time we saw a meaningful Sunday night game that wasn't round one, so pre-COVID, was back in 2014.
It was a Carlton game, wasn't it?
That's right. Carlton,
yep.
Collingwood.
Yep.
Round 15, they trialled it on a Sunday night with a 7:10 bounce, and there are only 40,000 there, which is not a Carlton Collingwood crowd. So they never went near it again, but now that they don't have the risk of people not turning up, they're going to trial it, and I think why not? I've spoken to the AFL tonight, and they've said if people don't watch it, we won't continue with it past round 5, but it's hard to see, Jared, how that game won't rate, because there's no overlap, and it's a Fox game anyway.
Yeah, my understanding is that game actually rated particularly well, Scoop, so given that it's starting at 6:05, finishing is at 8:30, it just basically takes the place of, well, in my day, was Disneyland.
And just before we get to Lloydie, I will put a caveat on the season and say watch out for Tasmania games after round 5. We've still got Hawthorn and North Melbourne, who have 4 home games each,
yep,
fixtured for the rest of the year. They would like to get that revenue, and they probably want to take big teams down there so that you've got TV eyeballs now that there are no crowds. So Travis Old alluded to that a little earlier today. We might see teams like Essendon, like Collingwood, down to Tasmania.
Well, Travis Old is going to join us after our first break. But clearly they're going to have to release the 2-week isolation element for that to occur.
Yeah, that's right.
As will South Australia and clearly Western Australia. I think South Australia has a chance. I don't think we've got much chance of Western Australia in the short term. But you're telling us that Tassie are just about on board.
I think they're moving closer that way. I've given up on trying to estimate what the South Australians are doing. I just seem to get that wrong every time.
Interesting. Lloydie joins us. Welcome to you, Lloydie.
Yeah, great. It's always exciting when the fixture comes out. And I'm with you, Jared, asking Travis Old about where in the week can we find a slot, yep, where we have no games overlapping. Mm. So, you know, I just wonder whether it's in Perth, you know, where we can have those, you know, Sunday night even, you know, 4 o'clock game.
Well, I reckon they've got Sunday about right. Mm. But the Saturday is the problem. Now, it's solved if we take a line through rugby league. Mm. They have back-to-back games on Friday night. Kicks off at 6. Yeah. Their game is a fair bit shorter than our game. But our game, if it continues to, you know, sustain what it is at the present time, it's a 2.5-hour coverage rather than a 3-hour coverage. If you kick one off at 6, then you can get the job done. But, I mean, everybody has to be on board, including the fans and the broadcasters.
Lloydie, would there be an exhaustion level for you if you had back-to-back games over a 3.5-hour period?
Well, for me, I hate the fact, as a broadcaster, I'm talking from a broadcaster, that Saturday night I'm trying to flick between two. So
absolutely.
I'm thinking from a work perspective.
Yep.
I wish, so there was no excuses where you're having to choose.
But even as a spectator, yeah, as a neutral, yeah, I often sit at home and I'm filthy. I can't watch both games. I mean, we often have the big preview to what supposedly is the big game, but sometimes it's the not-so-big game that turns into a ripper.
And have Friday night, we've tried it once before, haven't we? Maybe on an Anzac, where it falls on an Anzac day.
Yep.
Where you have Collingwood Essendon, I know it's earlier, but can we get a Melbourne game, as Jared said earlier, and then a Perth game after? It's just be great to ask Travis Old what they can try at some stage throughout the year in the next this period, where we have nine games where none of them overlap, maybe in the next four-week block. That'd be really interesting. Just on the Sunday night, I love it too. Would I take my kids at 6:05 to sit in the stands? I would on school holidays, but not in this period. So I reckon it's something that will be massive on television. But crowds will always be a struggle. So it's up to the AFL what they're looking for most.
And you've been out in the weekend having kicked a kick with your son?
Yes. I always take him out on a Sunday afternoon, Jared, having a kick the kick. And more people are out and about ready for their seasons, ready to go.
Is school footy still going to happen? I know you're senior coach of Haileybury now.
Yes. We're still unsure. We haven't been told, but it's getting more and more confident as the days go past, Sam, that in term three we might have around an eight-week season.
That was Jared bashing the microphone because he was so disappointed that there's a chance that we won't get school footy, I think.
Well, I think it's a really big sign for kids in their final year. I think VCE, football, and the final year of football is such a lasting memory for kids that go through that experience. If you can actually win a premiership as well in your final year, it's fantastic. But for everybody who just competes, it just is a, for me, a memory that stays with you for your entire school or your entire life, that final year of school footy.
Yep, I'll never forget that year of school footy. Let me ask you both this. Do Geelong deserve to play all of their home games, no matter who it's against, down at GMHBA, given that we will have no crowds?
Well, it makes no sense, no logic at all if they don't. I mean, why would you come up to Melbourne, the MCG, to play a home game at the MCG when your home ground is down at GMHBA? And I can understand the bigger crowd. You wouldn't play the Hawthorn Geelong blockbuster on a Monday, Easter Monday, because you're turning away 30,000 people. But it makes no sense otherwise.
I agree. Lloydie?
Well, it surprised me a little bit when I thought it's a Friday night game, that it's down in Geelong. But as I said, no crowds and those things. So if that's one of their home games, and it sorts out that they get, you know.
What's it matter if it's Friday night or Monday morning?
It's just more so that I was thinking 9 versus 8. It's going to be, what I'll be interested in, Jared, is how it works out with who gets what home games versus misses out. That's how it's going to fall. 17-game fixture.
Yep.
How many do you get away? How many do you get at home? Who are the winners? And for Geelong, they've won, I think, lost 4 of their last 37 down there. So to me, I'd probably maybe tip Hawthorn at the MCG.
Would you?
Yeah, okay. I'd tip Geelong at home because they just don't lose there. So how it falls, is this Geelong's 9th game in Geelong?
They don't play a lot of the big teams down there, though, do they?
No.
I mean, they're often getting Fremantle or Port Adelaide or a Gold Coast. So the next question to that, Jared, is if we agree on that point, and crowds still aren't allowed in come finals time, should they, if they draw Collingwood in a final, should they be allowed to play it down there?
Well, once again, it's illogical not to play down there.
Okay, so
if there's no crowds, then there's no argument. A home ground is a home ground.
And, you know, Travis Old did, and we'll talk to him about this soon, but he did allude to in his press conference over Zoom today that, you know, they'll look, as the Melbourne Storm have been doing, to try to have staggered crowds. So you might have 5,000, you might have 10,000 down there. That would still be a good capacity down at GMHBA. It's just going to get to a really interesting part of the year, Jared and Lloyd. If we get to a preliminary final, they draw a Collingwood or an Essendon or a Richmond, and they demand to play it down there on a ground that those clubs rarely play at.
Well, once again, it'll get down to how many people can get in. If it's a prelim final, I reckon the AFL would be saying, well, if everybody was isolated to the level, we're going to get 15,000 people at GMHBA. We're going to get 35,000 people into the stadium at the MCG. We're going to the MCG under those circumstances.
Geez, that's going to be an interesting blow.
There are more on the falls, we think, at Geelong than any other ground.
Skinnier.
Because the skinnier and teams don't understand how to play there. If Hawthorn said to the AFL, we want to be able to train at Geelong's ground, would it be allowed, you think?
Well, it should be.
Is it up to the AFL or Geelong Footy Club?
No, I think it should be up to the AFL. They're going to allow Geelong to play all their home games down there against teams that never go down there. They should allow them the chance to train.
It is an amazing stat. Burgoyne, Scully and Patton are the only three of their list that has played there.
So Scully and Patton obviously with GWS and Burgoyne because he's been around for longer than anyone else.
And it's interesting with it too, because I looked at that when you said Geelong and Brisbane have had the great, they both had bad losses in round one, Geelong and Brisbane. So they need to get off because 0-2 this year is not good.
Well, it's that's why it makes the Melbourne Carlton game so juicy.
You don't want to go 0-2.
And the is Owen numeral?
What are you talking about?
I thought O was a letter.
O-0.
The other game that is really interesting is the Western Bulldogs and the Saints because, I mean, the Saints had that game and then they got beaten up by the Kangaroos in the second half and they may live to rue that hour of football even as late as round 17 this year. But you wouldn't want to go 0-2.
And you also mentioned, Jared, I think in your take about the Saints, I'm not sure if you did or not, but no free-to-air games.
No.
But do they deserve any at this stage? It's only the first four rounds.
Interesting
but
question.
I think they'll be a sexier team to watch this year.
I agree.
But on what we've seen so far, I can sort of understand that they're a Fox footy team, not a Channel 7 team.
Yeah, I think you're right, Lloyd. They probably, like Carlton and Friday nights, haven't earned the right. Mm. Although 0-5 is a little, that's a little tough. Just another little morsel on the fixture, Jared and Lloyd. Interesting that Travis Old admitted.
I think they'll regret it, by the way, the free-to-air broadcasters.
They might. He admitted today that the AFL had sought special permission from the Victorian government to keep Marvel Stadium's roof closed. Of course, it had to be open in round one because it needed to be deemed an open venue, an open-air venue, but they don't want to do that. And it was a bit of a disaster. If you talk to Saints people on the Sunday afternoon, the Saints were 6 goals up, and then it started raining inside, and the game kind of turned on its head. I don't think anyone's blaming the rain, but if you're an indoor stadium, it should be indoor, I think.
Repeat that.
If it's an indoor stadium, it should be played indoors. Unless, of course, you've got a global pandemic that warrants that you need to open the roof, which I think everyone understood.
Unless the government is saying close the roof, keep the roof open, well, then you close the roof if it's going to rain. I mean, we had that debate every January when the tennis centre take 14 hours to close the roof.
But not if it's just going to rain. You just close the roof. It was built poorly. The sun doesn't get in there the right way. It just needs to be closed. They should close it and throw away the key.
No doubt. I was captain at one stage scoop of the Bombers.
Yep.
And I would, when the coin toss, I'd just always go to the end where I'd be, wouldn't be looking into the sun. It was a nightmare.
So that's when it was open?
When it was, the sun is that bad to the right-hand side.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of what end that is.
Is it the Coventry side?
End, yep. That you cannot see the footy. So selfishly, I'd let Dustin Fletcher look into it. And so I could charge out the ball in the first quarter, and he could cop it for the first quarter. So it was an absolute nightmare.
You're just learning a little bit more about Lloydie's leadership every week.
I'm also,
Jared.
Yes.
I'm just being a selfish full forward.
No, that's okay. Well, that's DNA. It's all part of full forwards. I'm also learning you don't rely on Scoop's research.
What do I do?
Well, Ben McAvoy's played down there.
Right.
My glasses are fogged up.
James
Frawley's played down there.
And Chad Wingard, of course.
And Chadley Wingard's also there.
Well,
you know what?
We're all doing research
only,
on the run.
There's only six people out of the Hawthorns list that's played down there. The point stands. The research wasn't much good, though.
And I've ranked my top seven. Don't know where you want it, but my top seven in excitement levels for this first 5 weeks as well.
So are the Saints in any of the seven?
No, they're not.
Okay.
No, they're not.
They're not in any of the seven.
Jeez. Jared and Lloydie just going head-to-head about the Saints this year.
Who's got your most? Is it Bradley Hill? Is it Maxi King? What is it about the
Saints?
Or you think they'll make the finals?
I think they could make the finals. I'm disappointed they threw away that first game against the Kangaroos. But that footy they played in the first half of that game is good enough to play finals. Now, whether or not they can sustain that is one of the reasons why we keep turning up to the footy. You have Brad Hill in the side. You have Jones in the side. That adds pace. They've got the young bloke from Richmond. They've got a lot of organic growth coming through that side. And they might just be a little bit happier with a new coach.
Yep. Yeah, I think they'll play a better brand of footy and thereabouts. But what about Jakey Carlisle? Did you follow that story?
I did.
He missed with a back.
A back. And he wasn't in a great space. Had lost two grandparents and things like that. So hopefully Jake is one of those players. Because Jake needs, I've known Jake very well, he needs to be in a good space to play. And
there was a suggestion that they may be so strong that he might miss out.
Yeah, I'd heard he'd missed on form.
Yeah.
That's what I'd been told, that he and Josh Battle both missed out on form. So it just shows the depth with Howard coming to the footy club. But be interesting to see who's there next time around in round two.
Well, I'd be absolutely shocked if he wasn't, given the talk around St Kilda when he was missing with that back for last year after he had that pretty nasty surgery, that they just weren't at the same time.
Lloydie, your thoughts on marquee players being outside the cap?
I think they get paid well enough already, personally. So I think that Dustin Martin's the biggest marquee player at the moment, and Sam, he's been getting paid, what,
1.4
probably? Yeah, 1.4.
That's pre-cut. Yeah, pre-cut, and that's in a premiership team where I'm sure Jack's not going hungry, Trent Cotchin isn't.
Rance when he's playing.
Tommy Lynch coming to the club. So I think there's still how many million-dollar players? It's still five.
I think there was eight for the last
million dollar
list.
Players. So I'm not for it. Are you for it?
Or? Oh, absolutely not. I think it's a ridiculous notion. It's being pushed up, I believe, by a couple of managers, and I can understand why from their perspective. But why have a cap if you're going to have people outside of the cap?
Completely agree.
Makes no sense.
And that's the thing about it. They're not the ones. Those guys, really, there might be a secondary or third player going, oh, okay, we try and pick him off and he can be our marquee player anyway. But still, they're getting paid extremely well as well. So I think it's about the bottom end. I'm trying to think who it was. No, it was Ricky Nixon who came out and said Lance Franklin should be paid. I got Carey $1 million, he said, 20 years ago, yet Franklin's still only on just over $1 million, not only, but just on $1 million. So he said the top players have never gone up like they should, but still they're being very well remunerated.
The question I have for you on this particular issue, if, as seems to be quite popular at the present time, there's this view that we keep slashing and burning the bottom six or seven people at the club, so maybe numbers 20 through to 35, the 15 bottom players, they're basically turning up for peanuts. And I say that in inverted commas. It may be 100, it may be 150,000. If that level gets cut to such a degree, then those people, I think, have to ask themselves, can I make a career out of this? Unless they're going to elevate themselves to superstardom, it's going to be hard for me if I'm a kid who's potentially going to earn $100,000 for 5 years to justify giving away any opportunity to be a lawyer, a carpenter, a plumber, etc. Because that group of players will have to absolutely, like it was in the 80s and the 90s, focus on having a backstop, and that is something to go to. So if the clubs are going to go down that track, and that may well be the case, then I think they're also entitled to have a look at changing the training regimes where these people, there's more flexibility built in for people to have a career outside of football if it doesn't work out for them.
I was chatting to a player today who said they're actually loving the fact that you pretty much get in, they're training extremely hard when they get there, but then they're pretty much straight out. So they haven't done much at all on game style. They're not sitting in meetings.
Yep.
They're not having to go off to see somebody else who's justifying their job either. So they're actually enjoying what it's been stripped back to in terms of coming, doing your thing, getting out. And it does give you time to do other things. And I've spoken to two coaches who say, Jared, to be honest, if those bottom men don't want to take the money, well, we'll just get someone else in. So they don't really have any sympathy for those guys who wouldn't be willing to take that $150,000.
Speaking about stripping the game back, we've obviously got shorter games with shorter quarters. Lloydie, do you think this is an eye toward the future?
Well, I think I'm not fazed by the shorter quarters, but I think that a lot of media people who push that the game should be shorter, I think they watch a lot of footy and sometimes can be tired by the game. So what I'm saying is I've never heard a fan who loves their club, who goes to watch their club every week, go, geez, I'm glad that game was shorter, or I want the game to be shorter. It's people within the media who peddle this, who sometimes I think maybe take the job for granted, take the game for granted, and maybe are tired with seeing three games, four games a week, and go, yeah, we've got to, and Eddie McGuire was one that spoke about that. And I was just saying to you, if any Collingwood member ever rang you up, Eddie, and said, the game's going too long, we need shorter Collingwood matches. I'd be shocked if a Collingwood member rang him and said that. So that's what we've always got to come back to. The members love this game. They see their team for 2 hours a weekend. They don't want it any shorter. So us media people have got to understand that, not take this game for granted.
Well said, Lloydie. Jared, you're off to Fox. Looking forward to seeing you there with the Couch Crew.
Well, it's been interesting seeing you guys. It's great to see Lloydie with a smile on his face.
Can't wait.
And at this stage, you're 0 from 3, the last four quaddies that you've had over the weekend.
0 from 3.
I got really excited about his tipping. I got on board.
Jeez, didn't I as well.
And since then, he's had 0 wins. We'll take a break on Sports Day. Travis Old to join us after this.
Travis, it's obviously a difficult time. Anytime you get the fixture done, there's always going to be clubs that are happier than others. But How much harder has it been dealing with not just clubs, but dealing with governments and health officials trying to get some sort of fixture up and going?
Yeah, look, it's certainly been a unique situation in the sense that things are changing so much and so often. And so it's always difficult to get a firm footing as to what the regulations and conditions might be in each state. And so we've run a number of versions of the fixture to deal with different scenarios. And it was nice to actually announce the fixture for rounds 2 to 5 today with some level of certainty.
Travis, so you've got the Sunday nights for the next, well, for at least the first 4 weeks when we do kick back off, and Thursday nights at the other end. How long do we think we'll see both those Thursday night and Sunday night fixtures for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure, Sam. I think we've got the opportunity for more Thursday nights, and they're very popular from a broadcast perspective. Where we've held back historically is just to get it right from a sort of family-friendly time slot with school holidays and weather and whatnot. And so we don't have that constraint, unfortunately, certainly early on, at least in the fixture. And so I can see us certainly fixturing more Thursday nights. The Sunday 6:05 time slot we trialled in round one. Once again, you probably would be hesitant to do that with crowds, but without them, it works really well from a fan perspective. And so we'll run them the next 4 weeks and see how they go.
Trevor, we're having a chat off the top about, you know, we love the fixture, but there's still two games on a Saturday night that start at the same time, 7:40. Is there any way we could get where every game is, you know, not crossing over at all? Is there any possibility through the fixture through the next four weeks?
Yeah, it's difficult, Lordy. I mean, certainly it's one of our aims. If you can draw one game out into a Thursday night, that certainly makes it easier. And if you can take a game into a 6:05 p.m. slot on a Sunday, that also helps. So we've gone from probably having, I think, three games crossover each week to having one, which is a pretty good outcome. It'd be difficult to achieve much more than that and sort of sit within our venue and broadcast and travel constraints.
Will you need to go to a Wednesday night at all or another night throughout the period just to work in with 5-day breaks, 6-day breaks or anything like that?
No, we don't see that being necessary at the moment. When we were looking at contemplating hubs potentially for the entire competition, we did have to look at games most days or most nights of the week simply because of venue constraints and having to get those games away. We're even talking about some 4-day breaks. If we continue in this format, then we don't need to do that. And it's certainly the preference of clubs with days breaks and broadcasters to stick to a more traditional Thursday to Sunday fixture format.
You're listening to Sports Day with Sam McClure and Matthew Lloyd. If you're just tuning in, the other voice you're hearing is the fixture boss of the AFL, Travis Old. Travis, the Cats and GMHBA Stadium, if nothing changes with crowd restrictions, will they play all their home games down there?
Yeah, they will, in the sense that they've always campaigned to play more home games down at GMHBA. The thing that stopped us from doing that is just not locking out too many supporters, and so we've avoided sending the big drawing clubs down to Geelong. Given we don't have the constraints around fans attending games, then it makes sense that they can play each of their home games down there. So they'll get 8 or 9 home games, depends on how many home games they end up with, down at GMHBA if everything stays the same.
And will that continue with finals?
Well, we haven't thought that far ahead. It's a good question. We've sort of been very focused on getting this season restarted and this 4-week block. And so we'll start to work through some of those things. But certainly the constraint around crowds when it comes to finals is removed. So it's certainly a consideration.
So as a principle, that your ideology on the Cats playing finals down there wouldn't change if crowds are not allowed back?
Yeah, it's certainly only been crowds that have been the constraint to date. So that would make sense, yeah.
What about football in Tasmania, Trev? Are we expected to see that in the next block of football?
Certainly the two clubs, Hawthorn and North Melbourne, would like to continue to play games in Tasmania. At the moment, we can't just because of the quarantine regulations. But that may change throughout the year. If it does change, then certainly we'd look to work with those two clubs to fix some games in Tassie, yeah.
What about Darwin, where crowds can go and watch the football? Will we see a game there with a crowd at any stage this year?
Lloyd, it's the same. I suppose the same answer with Tasmania. They still have, while they can have crowds, they've still got quarantine requirements. And so, if a team was to go into Northern Territory, they'd have to quarantine for 14 days. So that would mean that they'd have to then have a bye or some sort. I'm not sure how we'd work around that. So things would need to change. But we're open to playing games, certainly in Northern Territory. They've been great supporters, and we plan to play games there prior to pausing the season. So all those opportunities are there. I think that the real benefit of releasing the fixture in small blocks is you can continue to reassess the environment and hopefully take advantage of all those opportunities.
Travis, with crowds, fair to say that a small crowd is better than no crowd, just purely because of the dire circumstances that not just the AFL, but much of the world finds itself in financially, that if you could have one every five, even one every 10 seats later in the year, that would be better than no crowd at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two things you focus on when you're constructing a fixture in a more normalised environment is the integrity of the competition and access for fans. And so, you know, that's what makes our game tick over. And if we can find a way somehow during the year to provide access for fans and even in smaller numbers than that, I'm sure clubs would like the opportunity to reward their loyal members by allowing the 10 games.
Trav, what about the blow-up, the phone calls you received? Do you cop it hiding every single time? Like, when did the clubs first receive this? Did they get it today like everyone else, or have they known about this for a day or two?
We generally chat to them a few days out. Yeah. I mean, we communicate with them sort of as we develop the fixture, but then as it gets a bit towards the pointy end, we start to communicate where we've landed. They're a lot more understanding this time, Lordy, than they normally are. I think they've realised that this has been quite a challenging process and a challenging period. So I haven't burst any eardrums yet like I might have done in prior years.
Did you get one from the Saints, who now have zero from their first five games on free-to-air TV?
No, but, you know, it's we've still got a long part of the season to fixture. And so if that didn't balance itself out, then understandably we would. But it's hard to judge it against the normalised year when you're just releasing four blocks, but they'll get their time with free-to-air games like every club.
And just the thinking behind why send Richmond, the reigning premiers, to the Gold Coast for at the moment, West Coast only home game away from Perth that's currently been fixtured. I mean, I guess the cynical view would be you would give it to a side that isn't going as well as Richmond and make Richmond travel across the Nullarbor later in the year.
Yeah, we certainly didn't stop that from happening. It's just the way it's fallen. And given that the opportunity did fall, then we thought it'd be a great game to put into one of those prime slots as we start to sort of relaunch the season. And no doubt Richmond would be pleased playing the Eagles in Queensland rather than playing them at Optus. We just don't know what's ahead of us. So we've got to take what we can get when it presents itself. And if the season pans out that West Coast can head back home sooner rather than later and host some games, then Richmond are probably better for it.
Hey, Trav, it's a really exciting fixture. I think you've done a fantastic job, you and your team, in regards to how great some of the games are. How strategic did you need to be also to finish with a bang as well for the last 4 weeks, making sure hopefully when we can have some crowds back, there's also some big games to look forward to in the back four games of the year?
Yeah, you need to, Lloyd. That's right. You need to make sure that you spread out the season. You want to start strongly, and we think we've done that, but you also got to be able to finish strongly. And so we've certainly done some work to make sure that there's enough of those big games to get us through the year. We haven't tried to be too clever in the sense of preparing a fixture on the basis that there may be the opportunity for crowds. It's difficult enough as it is. And so we'll continue to roll it out. If that happens, then certainly we'll look at the matchups and time slots and venues more closely as it relates to crowds.
Travis, I know it's been a busy day for you. You've been doing media absolutely everywhere and dealing with the 18 clubs on the phone as well. Appreciate you jumping on, and I think we're all pumped for round two.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for having me.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Australian Made. Certify your products as genuinely Australian. AustralianMade.com.au/apply. And it's now time for Lloydie's Top 7. It's all for Kia. Kia offers value you can trust in Australia's best 7-year warranty across the entire range. And, Lordy, your top seven tonight is?
Is around this next 4 weeks block. So my My favourite seven games I'm looking forward to.
Okay, Sam. So from rounds 2 to 5.
2 to 5,
as
yes.
you polish off the redskin that yes. Brooksy Yates in the break.
But number 7, and this could be high for a lot of people, but it's number 7 for me, Port Adelaide Bees versus the Adelaide Crows. That is in
showdown.
Yeah, that's not far away in round 2 on a Saturday night at the Adelaide Oval. That's going to be absolutely sensational. So it's huge over there. The pressure over there is like building up for a final. I know, speaking to Kane Corns and friends like that, that it's like building up for a final. And there's a fair letdown after that game. So you'd like to get one of those teams in round 3,
just,
I would have thought.
It's just going to be weird behind closed doors. I mean, I know it's all going to be weird, but particularly a showdown.
That's right. And it's the same with most of these games. Number 6, Geelong and Hawthorn.
Yep.
It was my favourite game for a long, long period of time. GMHBA round 2 on Friday night in round 2 as well. So that's brilliant. My 5th game, Essendon v Collingwood on a Friday night in round 5. So mm-hmm. we can't have Anzac Day this year. It's my favourite home and away game by an absolute mile. I actually enjoy it more than finals.
Yeah.
Not the grand final or the prelims, but some the first week
I'm
or
with
two
you
of
there.
Finals.
Yep.
Yeah. Sensational. Number 4, bigger than Essendon Pies, is because of the two teams and where they're going. Bulldogs versus the GWS Giants. Again, disappointing there's no crowd for the spite that they have in this game. But I reckon Bevo will wind his players up like an absolute clock, because I think that what had been done to them in that final last year with Bontempelli and the way Toby Green went after him.
They all went after him.
I thought they didn't handle that very well at all. So
who are you tipping? I know it's hard, but who are you tipping initially in that game?
It's at Marvel. I think the Giants will make the grand final this year. So I'll still tip the GWS Giants.
Okay.
Another Giants game, unbelievably, at number 3, Giants v Collingwood. I think, and again, both top 4 teams this year, in my opinion. So at Giants Stadium on a Friday night in round 4. Number 2, as you spoke about with Travis Old, West Coast v Richmond at Metricon. So it's got a funny feel to it, but just heavyweights, those two in round 5. And the game that kicks it all off is number 1, I think, the grand final preview, Sam. Collingwood v Richmond, MCG, round 2 on a Friday night. Is the number 1.
Hang on, grand final preview, but you said that you thought the Giants would make the grand final.
Oh, you are right. Lucky you are listening to me there. You picked me up.
You picked 3 teams.
I have picked 3 teams. So I think that I'll have to backtrack there. So I'll say Collingwood Richmond grand final preview, but
the Giants
will be in
out.
A prelim and just miss out. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to take you quickly through. We'll revisit this at the end of the 4-week block. Just give me a 1-word answer for a tip. So from 7 backwards, so Port v Adelaide?
I'll go Port.
Okay. Geelong Hawthorn?
At home, Geelong.
Essendon Collingwood?
Collingwood.
Dogs Giants?
That is in Marvel, so that's Giants. Yeah, Giants still.
Giants Collingwood?
I'm going Collingwood.
Ooh. Mm. West Coast Richmond? At Metricon?
At Metricon. I'll go the West Coast Eagles.
Wow. Mm. And Collingwood Richmond?
I will go the Tigers.
Okay. Lordy's top 7. All for Kia, offering you value you can trust across Australia's best 7-year warranty across the entire Kia range. Lordy tipping some interesting ones. And he's tried to have 3 teams in the grand final.
It's a different season. Maybe we can have a 3-way grand final. So.
This is Sports Day. Don't go anywhere. We've got more after this with Matthew Lloyd.
A sports news update for Tyre Power. In tough times, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer is here to help. TyrePower.com.au.
Good to see the boys. So, back into it.
Just a relief to get me around them again?
Yeah, it's just enjoyable. Since I've been at home, so it's been pretty boring. But good to see everyone.
And how is the recovery?
Yeah, I'm fine. So, just looking forward to getting back out there and mucking around.
That was the voice of Jack Stephen. This sports update for Tyre Power, keeping the Australian public safe on the roads in difficult times. TyrePower.com.au. Good to hear his voice, Lordy, and good to see him back training. Although, as the Geelong Footy Club has told us many times, football is not the main priority right now.
Yeah, watched him walking laps. He's a man of few words, but seemed to have a smile on his face, which was fantastic. And I think the way Geelong have supported him has been really good.
I agree.
And I think it shows that they've been really impressed with Jack Stephen up until this point. So, no, I'm not saying he did anything. I'm saying he's had not missed a beat in regards to his fitness and the way he'd gone about it. So he's won the respect of teammates and officials and all that sort of thing. So let's hope it doesn't set him back too far, because he may still play in round 2, could he? Or
yeah, I mean, they haven't said that specifically, but given that round 2 is still a little while away, and it seems like physically he's doing pretty well, and hopefully mentally he's doing well too. But you know, on the other side of it, and I made this point on Friday, I think until it's clearly a private matter until the Victoria Police say otherwise and until the club say otherwise. Yeah. So I think everyone has now learnt over the weekend that we just have to respect the privacy of that situation. Jesse Hogan looks to be closer to playing again than he has been for a while. They're going to take him to the Gold Coast. I think it's a really positive sign for a guy that not so long ago was written off as never playing again.
We touched on Jake Carlisle earlier and how this break has probably done a lot of players wonders. And I think for a guy like Jake, who was having some issues physically and mentally, it's fantastic for him. He looks in a great space. And Jesse Hogan, I loved hearing that today because I was hearing from Perth journalists that he'll never play for Fremantle again. And so to see that he's going to be taken away just shows that he's in a good headspace and he's a big chance to play some footy. So they said footy's a bonus for him if we get him out there in actual playing, but they want to have him around the group as much as possible and hopefully it'll be a nice return for him.
Yeah, and if he's doing well mentally, and obviously that's his biggest priority, I tell you what, the bonus he becomes for that footy club if we see him fit and firing again is just absolutely massive. Lloydie, it's been great to have you on. Lloydie here for McDonald's. They're the drive-thru people. McCafe, they're also coffee people. Good luck on Classified tonight. Yeah. Looking forward
Thanks,
to watching.
Sam.
Matthew Lloyd there. And Jared and I, well, we've been talking a lot about DIY, and we have a special makeover project for you to get excited about. Our friends at Beaumont Tiles, they've come on board, and we're going to give away two bathroom makeovers. They're valued at $10,000. All you have to do is head to iCanWin.com.au, upload a pic of your ugly bathroom that needs a makeover desperately, and tell us what your Beaumont style is. Looking forward to that comp. Tomorrow night on Sports Day, we've got Matt Finnis, the CEO of the Saints. It's going to be interesting to talk about their fixture. They'll have zero free-to-air games from their first five. Their first game will be against the Dogs in that Sunday night time slot we've been speaking about at 6.05. But currently, it is coming up towards 7 o'clock. You've got the news. This is Sports Day. This is Sports Day. It's all for Kia with Australia's best seven-year factory warranty and Red Energy. Born and bred in Melbourne, that's Red Energy. Looking forward to touching base with the CEO of the Fremantle Football Club, Simon Garlick, in just a moment because a lot of work has gone into not only themselves, but of course their rivals, the West Coast Eagles, the two South Australian clubs, as well as they prepare to head over to the Gold Coast where they'll be basing themselves. They'll each have to play at least one home match in Queensland, which is interesting in itself. And we're going to hear from Travis Old, the fixture boss, the man that put together rounds 2 to 5. A little later as well. We're also going to touch base with Hugh Van Kylenberg, who is from the Resilience Project. Obviously, isolation has a different impact on everyone. We're going to look at it through the sphere of sports. But let's get to Simon Garlick, the boss of the Fremantle Football Club, who joins us online. Simon, appreciate your time.
Not a problem at all, Sam. Good to be with you.
So, Simon, let's go through the logistics. When are you heading over to the Gold Coast?
Yeah, still something we're finalising. Obviously, now that we have surety around our first date being on that Saturday, March... Saturday, June 13, against Brisbane.
Yep.
It gives us a bit more clarity. There's a couple of options there in the sense that, you know, do we potentially treat that as an away game as per normal and go in there, fly to Brisbane, have that game and then settle ourselves into the Gold Coast? I think more likely is the scenario whereby we'll head over early that week, possibly on the Monday and Tuesday, get ourselves settled in and then make the short bus trip up for the game on the Saturday against Brisbane itself, just to make sure we're really comfortable and acclimatised in southeast Queensland.
Have you finalised how many players and staff you'll be taking?
Not as yet. As you would be aware, I'm sure, Sam, we've got the option of taking the entire group.
Yep.
It's interesting. When you add all of our rookies, our Category B rookies, we've actually got a list of 48, which is a significant amount. And as you can imagine, just with, you know, different players coming into the system in their first year, being at really early stage of the development, some of our injured group who are a bit of a way off, there's some decisions we've got to make. There's pluses and minuses for both. I think, interestingly, even some of our long-term injury players, for them to be around the group, also to have access to all of our high-performance and rehabilitation staff and resources, it can tend to make a bit of sense to come. But obviously, there's a fair few considerations with that. So again, you know, I think we've got in reality, this week is a bit of a D-day for us to finalise a lot of those detailed decisions as we lock down our home away from home.
So are you leaning towards taking the whole group then?
Yeah, I think that's the way it's more likely to end up. We think there's an opportunity. I think I've spoken to you and Jared previously about, we've got a really young group who are now looking at really building and developing its identity and culture. I think we're either the youngest or second youngest, depending on which metric you use. So for us to potentially have an opportunity when you go away, often the road stuff is where you get that opportunity to really accelerate some of those relationships and the discussions you can have. So we're seeing it as an opportunity, as first and foremost, to win as many games as we possibly can. But we think there's an added bonus for us to really build on that type of cultural and identity build that we can do over this next few this next short period.
Did you apply with the AFL to have extra staff on site, given that you're going to a hub?
Yeah, we've had that discussion. I think it there's a fair bit of logic to it. I think we're not looking to be unreasonable and gain any type of competitive advantage, but the reality it is, I think, the AFL looking at more people being involved on a game day. Clearly, when we're going to be 24/7 away from home, the opportunity to have the people that we think probably more veer towards the player welfare side, health and wellbeing component of it, with that touring party, we think it makes a pretty compelling case. So that's a discussion that's yet to be finalised, but we think, yeah, as I said, that there's some logic to it, and we'd like to see an opportunity to do that if we can.
How many more did you apply for?
We've spoken about four or five different additional roles, so we don't think it's excessive. As I said before, this isn't necessarily something that we're looking at from a performance advantage, but rather something to ensure that we look after our players, and not just the playing group, but the staff as well too. It's clearly it's a significant change for our game in particular, and something that wasn't envisaged at the start of the year. So having something in place where we can ensure that our people are looked after makes a heck of a lot of sense from our perspective.
Yep. Okay. What about the players with families and children? I know you're a young side. I was surprised to learn that you only have three players with kids. David Mundy would be one of them. Maybe Michael Walters. I'm not sure who the other two are. How will they go with the hubs, do you think? It's obviously it's an extra challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It's probably not to the same degree as some other clubs. I think I read that West Coast have 15 players with young families as well too, so it's more significant in that sense. We're really approaching it from a viewpoint of each individual circumstance, and we're really passing it over to the players themselves and the playing group to look at what works best for them. I think there's certainly an argument to say to you, go over in the initial stage and zero in and look to optimise a focus on the games themselves and winning as much as we possibly can, and then perhaps looking at families making and partners and the like making trips over towards the back half of our time there. But there's such variation in circumstances, Sam, depending on age of children, different scenarios that pop up. So we're being really open and flexible in that sense, and I think it's important for us to continue to be so. There might even be changes as and when we're over there. That's what life throws at you. So I think it's great that we've got the capability to cater for each of those circumstances, and based on the fact that we're going to be there for an extended period of time, we have to take day-to-day life activities and the way things change into account. So that's what we're looking to do throughout.
We're speaking to the CEO of the Fremantle Football Club, Simon Garlick, online on Sports Day. Simon, how closely are you and Trevor Nisbet, your counterpart at West Coast, involved in the negotiations with the government? I know there are so many hypotheticals and ifs and buts in these situations, but there must be some questions being asked as to, what happens if we get through rounds 2 to 5 and the border restrictions in WA aren't eased.
Yeah, look, Sam, we're pretty close in reality. To the point where Chris Dawson in particular, who's our Chief Commissioner of the Police here in WA, Chiefs of Staff of the Premier's Office, the Chief Medical Officer, we're having discussions with all of those key stakeholders, understanding the priority being the community health aspect of it, but obviously looking to see where we might be able to work on scenarios that allow for some level of flexibility. So it's an ongoing discussion. As you mentioned, there's such a significant part that'll all play in what the rest of the season looks like. I have a high level of confidence around the AFL as a whole, as an industry, both in a head office at Docklands, but also other clubs, that you know, regardless of the border situation, whether that stays as it is and requires a hub type approach, or whether there's some flexibility with that and a more traditional fly-in fly-out model can be applied to it. You know, we're really confident there'll be a run of games here in WA at some point. The AFL are really determined and on the record, I think, as saying that a big part of the flexible fixture that Travis will talk to you about and has been on the record of saying is to ensure that we can get as much equity in it. So I'm really confident on that end. What we don't know is just where it'll end up from a border control perspective here in WA. And that's not both, you know, the way people can come in and out, and particularly around the quarantine environment. As we all know, that's one of the biggest factors that we'd need to look at working through with the government here. But to answer your question, there's been really fruitful discussions. They understand the challenges that we've got, and we're continuing to work with them to try and get a really good outcome as the health outcomes tend to look like they're improving on a daily basis.
Will your players be able to play golf in Queensland?
It's a good question, Sam. It's one that I think the thing that we're focusing on as an industry, really, particularly in the short term, is doing everything we can to ensure that the season gets away without any interruptions. And the most logical interruption would be a positive test. I think everyone's doing everything they possibly can in that sense. The priority being, and when you boil it all down, we all love to have a hit of golf or go for a surf. I think when you boil it all down, the preference is that if there's some sacrifices in the short term, you know, the greater good for us all. You know, you're a big part of the industry, like so many others are, that we want to get games away. And if we can do something that controls that and helps that happen, then we'll do so. I think the one thing that we're all learning through this period is how rapidly things change. And the reality of the scenario is, you know, we're not playing games for another, 17 days or so? It's 17 days or so. If the trend keeps going along as it is, if we get a good couple of weeks up there, I'd like to think there might be some flexibility as things open up from the community perspective as well too. So don't want to put a line through it, mate, but at the same token, you know, the short term, we're just focusing on making sure we observe every possible protocol we can.
And I know we talked about this last time you and I had a chat when Jared was here, and we mentioned Jesse Hogan. It sounds like news today that he's going to travel to the Gold Coast. So that's sensational news, not just in a footy sense, but you know, in a personal sense for Jesse, that he's feeling well enough to get back to the club and maybe even get close to playing games again.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you when we caught up, Sam, that the progress that Jesse had been making just on a personal front was really encouraging, and you know, we couldn't be more pleased on that in that sense. And but at the time, and it still remains, that the footy component's secondary, and it's hard not to get a bit excited. He's come back to training last week in incredible shape. He's actually takes you back a little bit in terms of how fit and how well he looks in himself and the condition he's in. And it's hard not to get seduced a little bit by that in terms of, okay, what might that mean for an on-field perspective? But we're actually trying to, and we're going to maintain real discipline in that sense, that the overriding priority throughout all this has been his well-being and his health, and that's going to remain. So we keep taking advice, keep working with him, but you know, the reality is he's the progress he's made in recent times has been fantastic. So don't know where it'll end on that front, Sam, and you know, whilst it's tempting to think about, you know, when and where it could look from a return perspective on the field, but we'll work through that as it comes to pass. But you know, it's really pleasing, most importantly from a health and wellbeing perspective for Jesse.
Yeah, it certainly is. Obviously, footy is a bonus, but he's such a talented man in that area that we'd all love to see him playing footy again, and would certainly do great things on the field for the Fremantle Footy Club. Hey, Simon, really appreciate Absolutely. You jumping online. It's been a really challenging time for people across the world, but for the 18 clubs that we talk about here regularly on Sports Day and the AFL. But it's good to hear that footy is back. Good luck to the Dockers in the next four games.
Good on you, Sam. Appreciate the support.
Simon Garlick there, the Fremantle CEO, was also a star with the Bulldogs. You don't have to go back too far. Round 18, 2000, he kicked six against Carlton. And I think that might have even been Bob Murphy's first game. Anyway, we digress. This is Sports Day For Trojan Tools, they're backed by a lifetime guarantee. No questions asked. Trojan Tools available at Bunnings Warehouse. And we here at Sports Day are powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Make the switch today like Jared and I have. This is Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's Phil Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. Lloydie was in a little earlier. He gave his top seven games he's looking forward to. I'll give you a rundown of it. Coming in at seven was the showdown in round two, Geelong v Hawthorn, which also happens to be in round two. Five was Essendon Collingwood. Lloydie said the Anzac Day game, obviously, that can't happen, is his favourite of the home and away season. The Dogs and GWS coming in at number four. They've got a pretty feisty history, short history, it must be said. GWS and Collingwood coming in at number three. Round five sees Richmond travel to the Gold Coast to play West Coast. I know it sounds weird just saying it. And number one, it is the first game back on June 11, Collingwood versus Richmond. Adrian Dodoro had some interesting things to say on the recent Essendon podcast. That's been good listening, I must say. You can stream it on their website. I think it's also on live radio as well. He talked about Basher Hooley and how he begged, or the Essendon Footy Club begged, for him to stay and not walk out the door to Richmond. He also gave his take on the current setup with Joe Danaher and the trade that didn't go through.
We as a club stand by our decision to retain Joey. He is an incredibly talented player. We're taking the long game with Joey. We understand that, you know, he's still a young player and he's got a lot of good years ahead of him. And, you know, we're quietly optimistic that, you know, it might take a little bit longer, but we're going to get him on the park and hopefully he'll be an Essendon player for many years to come. But absolutely no regret whatsoever. And even to the point where I was looking today on who we would have picked had we have received pick nine, which is the pick that everyone's talking about. I can guarantee you that it probably would have still been Harry Jones because we targeted him and we had him as a first round draft selection. So, you know, people don't have all the information.
So that's interesting. So Adrian Dodoro is essentially claiming that had they traded Joe, they would have picked up the same player that they got. Well, there was also another pick that was going to be involved, probably another first round pick. And I mean, you completely understand that the list manager has to stand by his decision. I would pick him up on saying that he's claiming they're playing the long game. Joe Danaher's a restricted free agent at the end of the year. So really, a lot of it will be out of Essendon's hands. At the moment, with all the facts, you could only say that they missed an opportunity, Essendon, to trade him. But, you know, they're always going to stand by their decision until they don't. That was all for APCO. Win a huge 4K TV with Team APCO for Top Fan on now at APCO Service Stations. This is Sports Day. More after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Kia with Australia's best 7-year factory warranty and Red Energy. Born and bred in Melbourne, that's Red Energy. Huge day for the AFL today and all its 18 clubs. Rounds 2-5, the next 4 weeks of the season restart announced. The man who put it together, Travis Old, is the fixture boss of the AFL and he joined Matthew Lloyd and I a little earlier. Travis, you know, it's obviously a difficult time. Anytime you get the fixture done, there's always going to be clubs that are happier than others, but how much harder has it been dealing with not just clubs, but dealing with governments and health officials trying to get some sort of fixture up and going?
Yeah, look, it's certainly been a unique situation in the sense that things are changing so much and so often. And so it's always difficult to get a firm footing as to what the regulations and conditions might be in each state. And so we've run a number of versions of the fixture to deal with different scenarios, and it was nice to actually announce the fixture for rounds 2-5 today with some level of certainty.
Travis, so you've got the Sunday nights for the next, well, for at least the first 4 weeks when we do kick back off, and Thursday nights at the other end. How long do we think we'll see both those Thursday night and Sunday night fixtures for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure, Sam. I think we've got the opportunity for more Thursday nights. And they're very popular from a broadcast perspective. Where we've held back historically is just to get it right from a sort of family-friendly time slot with school holidays and weather and whatnot. And so we don't have that constraint, unfortunately, certainly early on, at least in the fixture. And so I can see us certainly fixturing more Thursday nights. The Sunday 6:05 time slot we trialled in round one. Once again, you're probably... We'd be hesitant to do that with crowds, but without them, it works really well from a fan perspective. And so we'll run them the next 4 weeks and see how they go.
Trav, we're having a chat off the top about, you know, we love the fixture, but there's still two games on a Saturday night that start at the same time, 7:40. Is there any way we could get where every game is not crossing over at all? Is there any possibility through the fixture through the next four weeks?
Yeah, it's difficult, Lordy. I mean, certainly it's one of our aims. If you can draw one game out into a Thursday night, that certainly makes it easier. And if you can take a game into a 6:05 p.m. slot on a Sunday, that also helps. So we've gone from probably having, I think, three games cross over each week to having one, which is a pretty good outcome. It'd be difficult to achieve much more than that and sort of sit within our venue and broadcast and travel constraints.
Will you need to go to a Wednesday night at all or another night throughout the period just to work in with 5-day breaks, 6-day breaks or anything like that?
No, we don't see that being necessary at the moment. When we were looking at contemplating hubs potentially for the entire competition, we did have to look at games most days or most nights of the week simply because of venue constraints and having to get those games away. We're even talking about some 4-day breaks. If we continue in this format, then we don't need to do that. And it's certainly the preference of clubs with days breaks and broadcasters to stick to a more traditional Thursday to Sunday fixture format.
You're listening to Sports Day with Sam McClure and Matthew Lloyd. If you're just tuning in, the other voice you're hearing is the fixture boss of the AFL, Travis Old. Travis, the Cats and GMHBA Stadium, if nothing changes with crowd restrictions, will they play all their home games down there?
Yeah, they will, in the sense that they've always campaigned to play more home games down at GMHBA. The thing that's stopped us from doing that is just not locking out too many supporters, and so we've avoided sending the big drawing clubs down to Geelong, given we don't have the constraints around fans attending games. Then it makes sense that they can play each of their home games down there, so they'll get 8 or 9 home games. Depends on how many home games they end up with down at GMHBA if everything stays the same.
And will that continue with finals?
Well, we haven't thought that far ahead. It's a good question. We've sort of been very focused on getting this season restarted and this 4-week block. And so we'll start to work through some of those things. But certainly the constraint around crowds when it comes to finals is removed. So it's certainly a consideration.
So as a principle that, your ideology on the Cats playing finals down there wouldn't change if crowds are not allowed back?
Yeah, it's certainly only been crowds that have been the constraint to date. So that would make sense, yeah.
What about football in Tasmania, Trav? Are we expected to see that in the next block of football?
Certainly the two clubs, Hawthorn and North Melbourne, would like to continue to play games in Tasmania. At the moment, we can't just because of the quarantine regulations. But that may change throughout the year. And if it does change, then certainly we'd look to work with those two clubs to fix some games in Tassie, yeah.
What about Darwin, where crowds can go and watch the football? Will we see a game there with a crowd at any stage this year?
Lloyd, it's the same, I suppose the same answer with Tasmania. They still have, while they can have crowds, they've still got quarantine requirements. And so if a team was to go into Northern Territory, they'd have to quarantine for 14 days. So that would mean that they'd have to then have a bye or some sort. I'm not sure how we'd work around that. So things would need to change, but we're open to playing games, certainly in Northern Territory. They've been great supporters, and we plan to play games there prior to pausing the season. So all those opportunities are there. I think that the real benefit of releasing the fixture in small blocks is you can continue to reassess the environment and hopefully take advantage of all those opportunities.
Travis, with crowds, fair to say that a small crowd is better than no crowd, just purely because of the dire circumstances that not just the AFL, but much of the world finds itself in financially, that if you could have one every 5, even one every 10 seats later in the year, that would be better than no crowd at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two things you focus on when you're constructing a fixture in a more normalised environment is the integrity of the competition and access for fans. And so, that's what makes our game tick over. And if we can find a way somehow during the year to provide access for fans and even in smaller numbers than that, I'm sure clubs would like the opportunity to reward their loyal members by allowing them to attend games.
Trav, what about the blow up, the phone calls you received? Do you cop it hiding every single time? Like, when did the clubs first receive this? Did they get it today like everyone else, or have they known about this for a day or two?
We generally chat to them a few days out. Yeah. I mean, we communicate with them sort of as we develop the fixture, but then as it gets a bit towards the pointy end, we start to communicate where we've landed. They're a lot more understanding this time, Lordy, than they normally are. I think they've realised that this has been quite a challenging process and a challenging period. So I haven't burst any eardrums yet like I might have done in prior years.
Did you get one from the Saints, who now have zero from their first five games on free-to-air TV?
No, but, you know, we've still got a long part of the season, the fixture. And so if that didn't balance itself out, then understandably we would. But it's hard to judge it against a normalised year when you're just releasing four blocks. But they'll get their time with free-to-air games like every club.
And just the thinking behind why send Richmond, the reigning premiers, to the Gold Coast for at the moment, West Coast only home game away from Perth that's currently been fixtured. I mean, I guess the cynical view would be you would give it to a side that isn't going as well as Richmond and make Richmond travel across the Nullarbor later in the year.
Yeah, we certainly didn't stop that from happening. It's just the way it's fallen. And given that the opportunity did fall, then we thought it'd be a great game to put into one of those prime slots as we start to sort of relaunch the season. And so it's, no doubt Richmond would be pleased playing the Eagles in Queensland rather than playing them at Optus. We just don't know what's ahead of us. So we've got to take what we can get when it presents itself. And if the season pans out that West Coast can head back home sooner rather than later and host some games, then Richmond are probably better for it.
Hey, Trav, it's a really exciting fixture. I think you've done a fantastic job, you and your team, in regards to how great some of the games are. How strategic did you need to be also to finish with a bang as well for the last 4 weeks, with making sure hopefully when we can have some crowds back, there's also some big games to look forward to in the back four games of the year?
Yeah, you need to, Lloyd. That's right. You need to make sure that you spread out the season. You want to start strongly, and we think we've done that, but you also got to be able to finish strongly. And so we've certainly done some work to make sure that there's enough of those big games to get us through the year. We haven't tried to be too clever in the sense of preparing a fixture on the basis that there may be the opportunity for crowds. It's difficult enough as it is. And so we'll continue to roll it out. If that happens, then certainly we'll look at the matchups and time slots and venues more closely as it relates to crowds.
Travis, I know it's been a busy day for you. You've been doing media absolutely everywhere and dealing with the 18 clubs on the phone as well. Appreciate you jumping on, and I think we're all pumped for round two.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for having me.
Travis Old there. Book a free online consultation with Beaumonts. Choose Beaumonts. They're here to help you get your reno done online or in-store. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Kia with Australia's best 7-year factory warranty and Red Energy. Born and bred in Melbourne, that's Red Energy. We thought we'd touch base with a man who knows a lot about how athletes have been dealing with the last difficult period of time. It's been difficult for everyone across the world, but athletes in isolation always brings up different talking points. Hugh Van Kylenberg is from the Resilience Project, and he joins us on Sports Day. Hugh, appreciate your time.
Yeah, pleasure, Sam. Thanks for having me.
So, Hugh, you've worked with plenty of AFL clubs and NRL teams as well. I guess one of the most significant issues being around the world, really, not just in sport, has been around mental health and making sure you look after yourself before looking after anyone else. How difficult do you think it's been for people in isolation and particularly those in the sporting landscape?
I think it's been really hard, especially initially getting your head around, I mean, this is for all of us, but just getting your head around, the world changing so quickly. But I think a lot of the athletes I've been working with, one of the things we talk about a lot is practicing gratitude, paying attention to what you've got. Now, I think if you're someone who has been focusing on the people you can't see, the places you can't go and the things that you can't do, it has been quite hard to experience, happiness and hope and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of the athletes I've been working with, we've been working very hard on just paying attention on the things that you can still do, the people you can still see and the places you can still go. And when you pay attention to that, it does make it a lot easier to remain really positive and optimistic in a really tough time.
So that word gratitude, Hugh, I think is a really interesting one, because I reckon there are constant reminders of, you know, making sure that you are grateful for what you do have instead of concentrating on what you don't have. But it's one of those things that I reckon if you don't concentrate on it, it can go in one ear and out the other. How can we remind ourselves to practice gratitude?
Well, it's a bit of a discipline, really. Like, if you want to be, I remember hearing Justin Martin say this at a conference that he spoke at, but he said, if you want to be good at something, you have to practice it. And he said, gratitude's no different. Justin's been a great, you know, example of someone who has practiced gratitude every single day. So I think it's over 2,000 days now. It's been quite a while, it's been a few years, but he said, if you want to be good at something, you've got to practice it. Just like physical health, if you want to be fit, you know you've got to put the work in. But the great thing about practicing gratitude is that it only takes you 2 minutes every night before you go to bed. You just write in a little journal next to you what went well for you, or write on the shower screen door, or discuss it over dinner with your family what went well for you that day. If you come up with three things, you actually start to physically change your brain and you become someone who starts scanning the world for the positives. And the research says the more positive emotion you experience, then the more resilient you actually become. So that's really important at a time like this, to experience as much positive emotion as possible.
Okay, it's really interesting. I have to get the journal out before I go to bed. What else other than gratitude do you need to practice?
Well, there's a few. I mean, the only thing I'll say on gratitude very quickly is it gives you perspective as well. Like in 1918, the world went through a really similar thing. Like with the Spanish flu, the world went into isolation, into lockdown. I cannot imagine how hard that would have been in 1918. Like, no one's, I mean, we can still see our loved ones. We can still FaceTime them. We can still Skype them. We can still have conversations with them. That wasn't happening in 1918. We can all, you know, we've got Netflix. We're binge watching The Last Dance, whatever it is, you know, whatever you're watching. Like, we've still got, there's so much we can still do despite how hard it, you know, it is at times. So gratitude allows us that. The other things we've talked about a lot, especially with our elite athletes, and I read an article on the weekend on The Age about this with the Collingwood boys, but empathy is a big thing right now, which is when you sort of, I suppose you put yourself in someone else's shoes, and that makes you a much kinder person. The neuroscience says if you do something nice to someone else, your brain releases a hormone, which actually just makes you feel happy, oxytocin. So I'm not talking about outrageous acts of kindness. It was Jordan Rufford in the paper that I was speaking about on the weekend. He's shouting people coffees and he's doing little things like that. And he says it's making him feel really happy at a time where we need to experience as much kind of happiness as possible. So doing things for other people is really, really massive. I remember Billy Slater back in his second last NRL season, when he thought it potentially could be his last, he did his shoulder round two or round three and he's out for the whole year. So what he did was he decided to, every Saturday when he was going to be playing football, he decided to do a really significant random act of kindness for someone. And he said that actual act, he said, when we played footy, he said, I'm buzzing for a couple of days after it, but doing a random act of kindness for a stranger, like a small thing, he said, honestly, mate, it just gave me the same buzz. In fact, the buzz lasted a little bit longer, which I think is a really nice, like, reminder. I remember a neurosurgeon, like literally a brain surgeon, saying to me once, he said, mate, we always have access to joy and happiness, and it comes through doing things for other people. And he said that before coronavirus. So I think that's a really good reminder at a time like this. And the third one, Sam, that we talk about is mindfulness. And it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, but it's really important, because mindfulness is just the ability to stay calm and the ability to stay present. And we're not calm right now. Like the most common mental illness in Australia is anxiety. So, or anxiety disorder. So we're not calm and we're also not present. We spend so much time thinking about what the world's going to look like in a month or what the world's going to look like in 6 months' time. The last episode of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan's biographer said he's super skilled. Like, he couldn't jump higher than anyone else, which you could probably argue, but he said he wasn't a better shooter than anyone else. His skill was just so unbelievably present. He was so in the moment. Wherever he was, he was there. And so, you know, a lot of the athletes we're working with right now, it's just about getting the focus on right now, because, hey, you can control right now. You can't control what's going to happen in a month's time, in 6 weeks' time. You can't control when the season's going to restart. The more time you spend worrying about that, the more anxious you're going to become. Pay attention to what's happening right now. And that's a really easy way to stay motivated, is to remember that you have control over right now. And that's all you've got control over is right now. And the athletes, well, according to The Last Dance, Michael Jordan, his biographer, thinks he was the best in the world because he was so good at paying attention to right now.
I'm fascinated in the psychological space, particularly when it comes to sport. I think where a lot of people hit the wall with it, Hugh, when they're listening to people like you, is that they, you know, a lot of people demand of themselves and from others specifics. You know, if they don't get specific examples, how can I do it? So I'd really like to dig into that part of empathy, because I find that so fascinating with Billy Slater talking about buzzing after doing a random act of kindness. But I just wonder whether we can give some examples to our listeners about, you know, we're not all Billy Slater, are we? But what are the little things that we can do for random other people to get that buzz, to turn on that positivity?
That's such a great question, because a lot of the work we do with the Resilience Project is like, sure, it's great to have gratitude, empathy, and mindfulness, but if you're not giving people like really practical and really easy things they can do every day, it's kind of exactly like you said. You just go, eh, I can't be stuffed with this. It sounds like it works, but so I'll give you some really nice examples. So just on what you said about Billy Slater, Billy said, mate, a lot of the time people had no idea who I was. So it was like anyone doing it. He said, in Melbourne, mate, not everyone knows who I am.
Yeah.
So there was a picture that went up online. Somebody took a photo of him. He was going for a walk through the city on game day in Sydney, and he saw a couple of people sitting down alone, a couple of homeless people. So he went to the supermarket and he bought them breakfast, and he went to give it to him. He said, oh, I might as well sit down with him. And he sat with him for like an hour, and he said, mate, I was buzzing for a month after that. So it's actually looking out for opportunities to be there for other people. But I will give you a practical thing right now, just for the everyday person. So what I'm recommending throughout this really tough time in our lives is write down a list of 10 people. Get a notepad out or write it in your phone, in the notes section. 10 names, so 10 people that you've been thinking about a lot throughout this really difficult period. So, for example, from my life, I put my mum down because, number one, mum, she's had shingles and she's in isolation before coronavirus. We've had, you know, a child, my brother's had a child since we've been in isolation. She hasn't got to meet her grandkids probably, and she's struggling. So she's number one. Number two, my dad, by virtue of his age, he's quite vulnerable, so I'm a bit worried about him. One of my best mates from school spent all his life savings last year buying into a business, and that business has just recently closed its doors and no longer exists. So he spent his, you know, he's got three kids under the age of seven, a mortgage, and he doesn't have a cent to his name. So he's on my list. And then I started writing down a list of other people, a couple of sports people I know who are doing it really tough, and people, sports coaches have lost their jobs, and then some mates of mine who I've just been missing a lot. So I've written a list of 10 people, right? Anyone can do this, 10 people. And then every day when you get up, when you're having a coffee or you're having your breakfast, choose someone off the list and do something for them during the day. And I'm not talking about something massive, right? So to my parents, I said, I'm doing a shopping this week, and I did all the grocery shopping and drove it to them. They live about an hour away. So my mate who's lost his job, no longer lost his livelihood, I wrote him a letter. It was a short letter about the reasons I know he's going to be okay. It took me 15 minutes to write it. And incidentally, at the end of the day, when I was writing down stuff that went well for me, I realised it was actually when I was doing my gratitude stuff, the things that went well, it was when I was doing things for other people. What are examples? So give more people examples. It could be simply writing a text message to someone, just saying, hey, I'm thinking of you, hope you're going okay. I can't wait to catch up with you for a beer when we get through this. Like, that is a small thing, but it still has an impact for both the people involved, you and the person who receives the messages. So again, I'm not talking about donating heaps of money. It could be neighbours living down the street. I got my three-year-old son to make it. He did a drawing for the kids down the road, and we dropped it off in the letterbox. It's little things, but just tick someone off your list every day, and you watch what happens to you. It is amazing how much better you feel, and it gives you something to look forward to throughout the day as well. And that's something we are battling for at the moment, is a bit of, like, you know, if we're going to whinge and moan about coronavirus, we may as well start picking out silver linings as well. And if you've got things to look forward to in your day, they're your silver linings. And we've just got to take them at the moment.
Hugh, I think this is fascinating stuff. And I love the example, you know, that you talked about with Dustin Martin, that if you want to be physically good at something, you've got to practice it. It's the exact same in the mental and the emotional space. You have a book as well. What's it called? Where can we find it?
So the book's called The Resilience Project, Finding Happiness Through Gratitude, Empathy and Mindfulness. And it's been, I wrote it last year. It was really about the things you can do to stay happy, especially when you're really challenged. So I accidentally chose a really good time to write that book.
You did.
And it's been, apparently I've had some nice feedback on it, so which is really, really good. I mean, all this stuff, I should mention
you know, being a sporting show, I should mention the Port Adelaide Footy Club, who the second this happened, so the second, I remember being in the club, I do a lot of stuff for them, and I was in the club the day before the AFL just said, nah, this is everything, we're shutting everything down.
Yep.
And I remember getting a phone call from Chris Davies, head of football, and he said, mate, what, you know, what can we do for the boys? And they were so good in sending out a whole lot of challenges along this thing to make sure. They just said, look, you know, the financial stuff is obviously quite stressing for the whole club, but let's just look after their mental health first and foremost. And they did an incredible job providing this stuff to the players. So, and that's just, I'm just talking out Port Adelaide because I work with them, but I know a lot of the clubs have been doing some incredible work across this space, which is really fantastic to see.
Yeah, it is, because ultimately our professional athletes are just people like you and I, Hugh, and they have feelings and they feel anxious and they feel down and they feel sad at different stages as to all people in society. Hugh, we could talk for hours about this. I think it's such a fascinating space. I'd love to get you on again, and looking forward to going down to the local bookshop and grabbing a copy of The Resilience Project. Thanks so much for giving us some of your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Sam.
Hugh Van Kylenberg there, who is the author of The Resilience Project. Make sure you go and buy one of those, because happiness is something that we can all work more on. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to talk about your individual lifestyle. Hey, we've been talking about mindfulness. Jared and I have also been talking a lot the last few weeks about DIY, and we have a special makeover project to get you excited about. Our friends at Beaumont Tiles have come on board. We're going to give away two bathroom makeovers. They're valued at $10,000 each. All you have to do is head to iCanWin.com.au, upload a picture of your ugly bathroom at the moment. It needs a makeover, and tell us why and what your Beaumont style is. This has been Sports Day. Jared and I will be back from 6 o'clock tomorrow.